Good morning, everyone. Wow, it's so great to be back home. I want to start by thanking you for all of your support over the last 23 years that I've been away. For your money, I'm a happy recipient of that budget that was talked about. For your prayers, for your emails. I don't think any missionary could actually wish for a better sending church than Central Baptist, and I'm really, really grateful to all of you for your support for me. Last time I was home, I told you a little bit about the Audio Players Project for the domestic workers, the maids that are shut inside the houses, and I want to tell you a little bit about more about that this morning. There are officially 190,000 domestic workers in Lebanon who live with the family, and actually unofficially there are probably more like about 300,000. So one in four families has a live-in maid, and they live, you know, even in a little small apartment, 90 square meters, you would have a live-in maid. So maybe some of you women now will be rushing off to Lebanon. About 70% of them have no freedom of movement. They can't go out. They can't go to the shop if they want to. They can't go. They don't have a day off. 70% don't have a day off. So 2 years no day off. The only time they can leave the house is if their madame takes her with her. For example, the Ethiopian girl that lives opposite me. From my apartment, we became friends out of the kitchen windows, and she's been there 14 months, and she only was just recently given permission to leave the house and go across the road to the supermarket. Great gain for her, and she listens to that little MP3 player all the time. It has the Bible on it and 1,000 songs, and she's Muslim background. But I'm sure that she's come to faith. We don't really have a common language. But I know a little bit of Amharic. I know that Jesus Gitano means Jesus is Lord. And every time she passes me on the stairway when she's gone down to throw the rubbish out, she gives me a big hug and she says, Jesus Gitano. So the audio players definitely are having an impact. And when I saw that the joy that the audio player that I gave her predecessor brought to her, I decided to distribute them on a wider scale. And some of you in the church gave me money to do that. So, oh, is it going? I'm going to show you a screenshot from my phone, and this shows you where I've been. Okay. So this is Beirut. You can just see the word Beirut. There, don't worry about the color coding, but each one of those dots represents an apartment building in Beirut. And so those are the apartments that I've been to. So I've basically covered all of West Beirut, which was the Muslim side of Beirut, with audio players. And actually Hezbollah, we're very fascinated by that map. So when I was going around, I got to the Shiite suburbs, and I found out when I was doing my follow-up that Hezbollah were following me and picking up the audio players. So I decided, a friend and I went in and we wanted to talk to them and come to an understanding with them, because we do have permission to do that. We're in Lebanon, you can preach the gospel freely. So I wanted to get my audio players back because they'd taken about 70 of them, and that's a lot of money. And I wanted to get permission from them to distribute. And so instead of going in and thinking it would take 5 minutes, they detained us. They put us in separate rooms, and they locked the door, and they interrogated us. And the first thing he said is, I want to know who you are. Who are you? And so it was a wonderful opportunity to tell him what I was doing in Lebanon. And by the end of it, by the end of the 4 hours, he actually knew more about me probably than my own mother. But he wanted to know, you know, what do you mean you became a Christian? How did you become a, how does one, you know, how do you become a Christian? And what do you mean God called you to Lebanon? How does God speak to you? And it was a wonderful opportunity to share my faith with this man from Hezbollah. And he was amazed at this map. He'd never seen anything like it. He saw that I knew the names and the nationalities and phone numbers of basically every building janitor in Beirut. And initially they thought I was a spy. And so that's why the interrogation. And then they handed me over to general security and I spent a night in prison. And one, and the only prison I'd never visited before, which I'd always wanted to see. So I got to see it from the inside. People were like, weren't you scared? And actually I had a really good time. It wasn't intimidating at all. Hezbollah were very respectful to me, and it was a non-event basically. So 7,900 audio players have gone out to all of these different buildings around Beirut to shut in maids. Like, I always talk to the janitor, who's normally Syrian, and I say, these are not for the girls who on Sunday say, see you, madame, good night, I'll see you later. These are for the girls who never go out. And I say, you're the eyes and the ears of this building, and you know exactly, you know the secrets of this building. And they always laugh because they do, they know everything that's going on. And I say, if I go up and talk to the madame, she's not going to listen to me, she's going to be afraid of me, but she's not going to be afraid of you because she sees you all the time. And would you be willing to ask the madame, because we're walking in the light, we're not doing this behind the madame's back, and to see if she would accept one of these for her maid. And I'd say about, I haven't done the stats, but I'd say about 60% of the audio players got in. About 40% were returned to me, but about 60% of them got in. So just before I left, actually, at my farewell party, my friend told me a very encouraging story, because I don't normally get feedback on these, apart from the, you know, they often, the janitors say, oh, you know, they loved it or whatever. But my friend at my farewell party said she'd been talking to someone, and he had told her, not knowing that she knew me, the story of a girl in her building who had always been crying. She was a very sad maid, as many of them are. And he's told her that one day this foreign lady came along and gave audio players for the maids in the building. And he said from that time, she's always got the headphones in and she's always singing. And she's a different girl. So I thought it was really nice that he told my friend who was able to tell me. So they do make a difference. Here are, this is out doing distribution, so I don't normally see the maids, but this one was outside on the other side of a fence. Don't see the fence in the photo, but I'm like throwing an audio player over to her. And then her friend was at the window and they started speaking in Amharic. And she said, can you get me one too? So that's why she's got two in her hands. Oh, wait, how can I have missed one?
Millions of...
Sorry. I'm not really good at this technology stuff. There's supposed to be another
Millions
photo.
Of women, mainly from Africa and Asia, work as domestic servants in the Middle East, but many...
Sorry, Tim. It doesn't... Well, we don't need the second photo. We can just wait there for that. So, actually, they're out of order, I think. The next one that should come up is the BBC one. Yeah, that's the next one coming up. So, in my travels... From building to building, like, I don't think anyone else has done what I've done, just cover Beirut, building to building like that. I heard many, many tales of misery. Like, the janitors, they know that I'm a foreigner, they're foreigners, and they would confide in me and what was happening to different maids in these buildings. And one of them told me about a woman in his building, who lives on the sixth floor, and he would see her out sometimes cleaning the car in front of the building. And the madame would be upstairs on the balcony looking down at her while she cleaned the car. So he knew that something, he said she always looked scared and she would scuttle inside as soon as she'd finished cleaning the car. So I said to him, just get me a number. Just get a number from her and maybe I can help. And so it took 3 months for him to be able to, she just dropped like a piece of paper this big on the ground as she was walking inside. And so I got my friend who's a Filipino to call the number, and the people on the other end of the line nearly collapsed because they hadn't heard from her for 10 years. And for 10 years, she went to Lebanon. She made one phone call when she arrived saying, this is where I am, this is my number. And then after that, she just disappeared, nothing for 10 years. And he would go, he's a very, very poor man. He would go once a week into a nearby town, buy a phone card and call. And the employer would say, she's busy or hold the line. And he would hold the line until the card ran out, and then he'd have to try again the following week. And this went on for 10 years and didn't send any money either. So this story is actually more common than you can believe. It's not an isolated story, this kind of story. So now I'm going to show you a clip from a BBC documentary that was just shown when I was in the UK a week ago. I saw it on TV. So it's very, very new. If you need glasses to read, you need to put them on now because there are subtitles. It's some of it is in Arabic. So if you could play for that now, Tim.
Millions of women, mainly from Africa and Asia, work as domestic servants in the Middle East. But many face harsh conditions and are trapped in what's seen as a brutal form of modern-day slavery. Under a system known as kafala, their passports are confiscated and they're bound to their employer, risking punishment or imprisonment if they try to get out. A new documentary, Made in Hell, is the first part of the BBC's Why Slavery series, and it follows employment agents who vividly describe the trade, as well as maids who struggle to find a way home after harrowing, sometimes deadly experiences. Let's take a look.
So what to do for Halima now that I knew that she was that she'd been 10 years without money and without contact with her family? I called the embassy, and surprisingly, they were unable to help. Embassies in Lebanon, well, at least African and Asian embassies, have very, very little power. And it was about this time that a couple of friends of mine from the US visited me. And chatting one night, my friend said to me, "Why don't you do a website for, you know, for the domestic workers?" And I said, "I've thought about it, actually. I really wanted to do it. In fact, I did start one, and then I deleted it because I was too afraid that they would track it back to me." And he said, "Do you know what I do?" And I said, "Yes, you're a Bible college student, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes, but I'm also an internet security specialist." And so he went home, and he started a website, and he got me a second computer and a second phone. And he got really, really good security. And so was born the website This Is Lebanon. And at the time, I had little thought, actually, of where this would lead. All I thought was, I'm sick of hearing these stories, and I want to expose some of the abuses as a deterrent for other people who might consider abusing their maid. That was the main thing I had in mind, just, you know, let's make these stories known and it'll be a deterrent to others. And so one of the first posts, actually it was number two post on our Facebook page, was a video that Halima's family made for us. Her husband and her three young daughters made a short video clip, very amateur, I mean like very, very amateur, saying, where is Halima? Where is our mum? And where is my wife? And this post went viral. It had over 200,000 views. And so it put a lot of pressure on the employers who felt like they had to respond. And we kept the pressure up on the page. And eventually they couldn't stand it anymore. And they, at night, without telling anyone, not even her family, that she was going, they stuck her on a plane and sent her home. Fortunately, the concierge saw her going out the door with the bag and called me, and I was able to ring the family and let them know that she was on her way, and so they could meet her. So we decided, a friend and I decided that we would follow Halima. We would go to the Philippines and make a video about her story, because no one, you know, she was on our Facebook page, where is Halima, free Halima, release Halima, and then, you know, she was gone, and we wanted to make a story about what she had been through. So we went to the Philippines and stayed in the jungle with Halima for 3 days. No phone, no toilet, no electricity, very, very, very primitive. No food security. And so they might know what they're going to eat tomorrow, but they don't know if they'll have enough food in 2 or 3 months. And so when you see the living conditions of these women, you completely understand why their main export is women to the Middle East. And so I'm going to show you a short clip of, we made a 15-minute documentary, but this is just a little clip from the very end of it where you see Halima and the youngest of her three daughters. Will it work if I press this, Tim?
Tapos, pag halimbawa, ni minsan ba naisip mong, nasa isip mo bang tumakas?
Gusto ko rin tumakas, pero paano ako makatakas sa kandado ako?
Nakakandado ka?
Oo.
Ano, na minsan ba naisip mo na rin na parang magpakamatay, yung ganun?
Naisip ko rin para magpakamatay, pero naisip ko yung mga anak ko.
Naisip mo yung mga anak mo?
Oo.
Ang masasabi ko po kay Madam Ibtisam sa Arit ay masaya siya sa ginawa niya sa aking nanay. Hindi lang niya ang naisip na kung saan kanya anak gagawin. Ito ang ginawa niya sa amin. Sampung taon na hindi nagkikita.
Okay.
Nakapiling ay nanay, tapos pinauwi pa siya na walang dala sa hutsana. Makakulong ang amo niya. Ina.
So when we met Halima, we found out things that we never knew before. We found out that for the same family, there was an Ethiopian maid working, and she told Halima that she couldn't take anymore and she was going to try to escape. And she jumped from, I don't know if it was the second or the third floor, and she died. So actually 2 domestic workers die every week in Lebanon. 2 every week die. And they're mostly either suicides because they've lost all hope, or they're botched escape attempts, you know, trying to put sheets down from 7th floors and stuff like that, and they end up dying. Halima's madam was actually a politician, and she's a friend of the president, the Lebanese president, and she is a defender of women's rights. Obviously only a Lebanese woman. So Our Facebook page has grown in followers. We're now just shy of 30,000 people following the page. And before I knew it, and without any planning on my part, it became the hotline for domestic workers in Lebanon. The Ministry of Labour do run a hotline, but they never answer it. And even if they do, it's in Arabic. So, we are now the hotline for these 300,000 plus domestic workers. Sonam's family are from the Tamang tribe in Nepal. And they don't even speak Nepali. They're from a very, very remote area of Nepal. And somehow they found out about our page in Nepal, and they contacted us about their daughter Sonam, who had been missing for 10 years in Lebanon as well. And Sonam's sponsor is a well-known prostate doctor and a vineyard owner. And he put Sonam with his mother, his elderly mother, and his single brother. And pressure from our page also resulted in her release. Unfortunately, like Halima, she was only sent home with $4,000 for her 10 years of labour. And this is a clip of her mother. These are just short clips from the longer ones on our page, but to give you an idea.
Video. Ani. Mere sare. Teh rahi ni. Rohi bhai rai cha darale. Manji de ne sa tai kura bolnu pani chhor cha. Mere sare yesto. Bhai ra pathaunu bhai cha mere sare ko kamai. Jasto ja usto hi. जति भएको छ उसको पैसा जति भएको रहेछ त्यति हेरेर पठाइदिनु होला दस वर्षको कामै पठाइदिनु होला मेरो भूकम्पले भूप मात्रै बितेको छ हाम्रो जान सबै छ जानै छैन जानु पर्दैन भनेर साउले नपठाउने अरे राम उसलाई राम्रो पनि नगर्ने अरे साउले कुट्ने बेलामा त लौ अब म यहीँ मारेँ भनेको जस्तो हुन्छ अरे अब उसको पैसा कति रहेछ हेरेर पठाइदिनु होला सारहरूले त्यति मात्रै भनिदिने अरे
That's the single man that she lived with, who we believe was sexually abusing her. At least she's home. She's not paid, but at least she's home. So a few months into things, we posted about a recruiting agent, like you heard on the BBC thing. These guys are basically slave traders, most of them. And we had physical evidence that he was beating women up. If they said they wanted to go back to the agent and have a change of employer, he would beat them up so badly that the next placement, they wouldn't ask to be returned to him. And in response to our Facebook post, he mounted a campaign and he got all of his friends to give us 1-star reviews on Facebook. And he also got everyone that he knew to report the page as, I don't know, hate speech or something like that. And as a response, Facebook unpublished us. They took our page down. And the day it happened, I was visiting the prison where I used to go every Wednesday to visit the domestic workers. And in the Bible study that we did there, we'd been working our way through the story of Exodus, as I know that you have been too, because I was listening to the podcasts. And that day in the prison, we'd reached the passage where the Israelites are stuck with the army behind them and the sea in front of them. And I preached very, very eloquently in the prison on that verse, "Do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." And then I thought, wow, I did a really good job on that verse. And I came home and I opened up my computer, as I always do when I walk in the house, and oh, my page is gone. I've been unpublished. And then I thought, I wonder if that's really true, what I preached today. I wonder if that really works. And there's no way that you can contact the Facebook machine. It is a machine. And everything I read online frantically of people who had had their pages unpublished, not one of them ever got their page back. It's impossible to get it back. So we wrote a post knowing that Facebook, well, hoping that Facebook would read it, knowing that no one else could, saying, we are the underground railroad for domestic workers in Lebanon, and you have just cut the tracks. And I should say here that the face of our page is a Nepali friend of mine who used to be a migrant worker in Lebanon, who came to faith in the prison, actually, and managed to get to Canada and is now a Canadian citizen. And so he's the face of our Facebook page. If anyone, it kind of takes attention away from me when I was there. No one knew about me. And if anyone said, oh, you know, we're going to find you and we're going to get you and whatever, and, you know, we're going to find out who you are, I'd just say, oh, let us help you with that. And then I'd put the picture of Dipendra. And, yeah, so he was the face of our page. So 3 days after we were unpublished, we received an email from Facebook, and it was just one line. It says, your page has now been republished. Yeah, it was amazing. But what was even more amazing than that was that it was signed by a Nepali. So that's like something I could never have engineered, you know, that a Nepali in Facebook would review our page, because all Nepalis know about the suffering of their women in the Middle East. So glory to God, it does work. We got our Facebook page back. A case that we're currently handling came through a man from, he contacted us from Ghana, and he said that his sister had also dropped off the map 2 years ago when she went to Lebanon. And this is what happened when I called her employer, the girl's employer.
Hi, I'm fine, and you're?
Good, thank you. Thank you very much. Could I talk to her on your phone?
No, I'm sorry, because I'm always busy at work. And I cannot allow her to use any phone because when she uses the phone, she is making always trouble. Wait 2 months, she will be in Ghana. Maybe I'm waiting for another girl. Once the other girl will arrive, I will book for it and she will be in Ghana. Yani maximum 2 weeks, 2 months, she will be in Ghana.
No, I can't wait 2 months. I need to check on her.
She is very fine. Aslan, the rules here in Lebanon, nobody can force me here to buy her a phone or to let her contact her family. She has right only for 6 months or every 1 year to call her family. Nothing in the contract forced me to let her contact her family all the time.
She's entitled to a phone call once a month.
Once a month. 2 weeks ago, she called her mom.
No, she didn't. I'm talking to her brother.
Lina has taken my sister to Lebanon for 2 years now. You don't hear from her. Her mother is so sick because she don't hear from her. She has been thinking about my sister every day. I hope you are fine over there. Yes, I hope you are fine.
So we make these little videos and we send them to the employer, and we say, unless you send her home and unless you give her her money, we're going to put your face all over Facebook and we're going to boost it. We're going to boost it so that everyone within a 5 kilometer radius of your house will see it. And I can guarantee you that at least 20,000 people are going to see you on Facebook. And this has remarkable results. So this girl here, the employer, the one I spoke to, her ex-husband, we've sent it to him as well, and he went and got her out of that house and is now helping us to repatriate her to Ghana. So she's not home yet, but she's in the process of getting home. And just yesterday I heard from a Togolese lady who hadn't been paid for 3 years and they weren't releasing her, and she just got home this week with her $10,000, and she's back with her family. So we're not always successful, and it really breaks my heart for the ones that, you know, we can't get their money. But sometimes we do manage to get them home. If you're disgusted with what you've heard today, and I hope that you are, you can do something to help. And it's, I don't know if in your generation, if you people here that you have Facebook, but if you do, even my mother has Facebook, you need to go onto our page and like it. It's called This is Lebanon. That's the logo. And if you just like it, that's great, because the more likes we have, the more power we have. But if you follow and you put click see first, if you can work out how to do that, then you'll actually see the posts. If you don't do that, you'll never see a post from us the way it works on Facebook. But if you comment and you write reviews, give us a 5-star review, that all those things really help us. Please don't mention my name anywhere on there. So now we're employing 2 staff. And the one on the left is Innu, and Bunchy is on the right. I know some of you have prayed for Bunchy, and I wanted to tell you about her. Bunchy's been working with me for 6 months. Bunchy and I basically live on my sofa. we live and breathe this page, because it's grown so much that we're always getting, like every day probably we get 2 new cases, and it's overwhelming. We really have too many cases that we to manage alone. But at the beginning, we weren't so careful, and Bunchy gave her number to victims, and then her phone number started getting out, her Lebanese number. And then I became afraid for her, actually, that her life was in danger, because some of the perpetrators who we've exposed are politicians, they're doctors, they're international haute couture companies, very people with really high connections to the president. And I thought, I was worried that Bunchy would eventually get caught, and then if she got caught, I'm white, so nothing's going to happen to me. But if Bunchy went to prison, she was sure to face torture. And I tried to get her out. I tried to get her to New Zealand. I wanted to bring her home with me. And a lot of people tried to help me. I rang immigration lawyers. I rang, you know, people here made inquiries for me. Thank you. And everyone said it's impossible. They said Bunchy needs a miracle. And I told my sister Fiona that, and she said, well, it's just as well we have a God who does those. And then I gave up. I couldn't do anything, really. I had nothing in my power to help her. And then a woman contacted the page asking help for a Filipino woman that she knew. And I was able to help her and give her advice. And at the end, she said, oh, those are expats. Those of us expats living here in Lebanon are just so thrilled with your page. And I was like, oh, that's very nice. Thank you. Very encouraging. What do you do in Lebanon? And she said, I work for the UN. I was like, oh, really? Because Bunchy was already a UN accredited refugee. And I'm not kidding, the next day, the head of the resettlement program contacted me. And Bunchy was fast-tracked for resettlement. And she arrived in Canada this last Friday, the same day I arrived in New Zealand. So it's amazing, really. I just think, I was like, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. And only God could have engineered Bunchy's resettlement in Canada. So she's, please pray for her. She's an amazing woman. She's her life is lived very sacrificially for others. She's open to people praying with her. She she's very happy with that, but she doesn't really personally know Jesus yet. But please pray for Bunchy that she will, I'm trying to introduce her to Christians in Canada. I'm trying to get her adopted by a Christian family. So if you can remember to pray for Bunchy, that would be great. We have a safe house now in Lebanon. We had so many women that we didn't know what, you know, my house was the safe house for a while. And then it became unsafe when the general security were thinking of throwing me out. So we opened a safe house. And we don't have many people there, but currently we have 2 women who were both raped and are pregnant. And one of them only found out she was pregnant when she was in the safe house, and she drank bleach to try and commit suicide. So some really extreme cases. One of them was raped by her employer, who's a policeman in Lebanon. And so he's. We've just found out yesterday that he's offering $11,000 to drop the case. And she's going to take it. She's going to take the money and run, because the judicial system is such in Lebanon that she could sit there for 3 years and maybe she'll lose the baby and just disaster. So she's going to take the money, and then we're going to try him in the court of public opinion on Facebook, because he's a serial offender. She's the third one, the third victim that we know about. So I got home just over a week ago. My residency permit wasn't renewed after 20 years in Lebanon. And I know that it was to do not with This Is Lebanon, because if it had been to do with that, I would have been sent home a lot earlier. It was to do with my detention back in January when I spent that night in prison. So I have real peace about it. I don't feel sadness at all about leaving. People said, aren't you sad? It feels like a release in some ways. I feel like God has pushed me out, because maybe it was starting to become a little bit dangerous for me to be in Lebanon. I would have stayed if they'd renewed my residency permit. So I felt like it was God just pushing me out. And I want to continue my advocacy for these women, because they really don't have a voice. They are the voiceless. So, basically I've been in Palmerston since Tuesday, and probably 7 or 8 hours a day I'm on the Facebook page dealing with cases and trying to help these women. We only started keeping statistics on the 2nd of June this year. We're still organising. But since the 2nd of June, we've had 748 people contact us. And we have 100 of those, are 110 are cases, from rapes to missing women, unpaid salaries, all kinds of things. I'm really thankful to God for the privilege of being able to serve in this way. I really love doing what I do. I thought I'd just close by reading a passage that was read at a Baptist church a week before I left Lebanon. An Ethiopian girl was, we think, we don't have proof, was raped, and she became pregnant, and we think she was murdered by her agent. She was found dead in his swimming pool. And the night before, they removed all the cameras from the house. And the baby died at birth from birth defects. And we think it was because he probably was forcing abortion pills on her. So we wanted to mark her passing. We thought her name was Limbibo. It turns out her name wasn't even Limbibo. But we held a memorial service for Limbibo in the Baptist Church of Haddis in Beirut. And the Baptist part, I always wanted to bring these two streams of my life together, the activist stream, where all of the people in that world are atheists or agnostics, and the Christian missionary world. And it happened in that last Sunday before I left Beirut, where all of these activists who would never normally darken the door of a church came to this memorial service for Limbibo, and there were many abused domestic workers there as well. And so we read this passage from Psalms in three different languages. Psalm 94. O Lord, God of vengeance, O God of vengeance, shine forth. Rise up, O judge of the earth. Repay to the proud what they deserve. O Lord, how long shall the wicked exult? They pour out their arrogant words. All the evildoers boast. They crush your people, O Lord, and afflict your heritage. They kill the widow and the sojourner and murder the fatherless. And they say, the Lord does not see. The God of Jacob does not perceive. Understand, O dullest of the people. Fools, when will you be wise? He who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? And the Baptist pastor after that got up and apologized to all the domestic workers there on behalf of the Lebanese people. And he said, I'm sorry. And there was not a dry eye in the place. So it was a really, I felt like it was a nice seal on my time there. And actually I went out and talked to the head of the anti-racism movement, one of the most, the better known activists in Lebanon, an atheist. And after he'd apologized, I went out and I stood beside her. She was outside the church. She didn't want to come in, just in the foyer. And she said to me, "Who is this?" She said, "I have never heard a religious leader talk this way before." So pray for Farah as well. Her name in Arabic means joy. So please pray for her that she also will, that, you know, this bridge that has started between the Baptist Church and these atheists, activists, that would be something that would have ongoing fruit. So that's, I could tell you stories that would go through until tomorrow morning, but thank you very much. Thank you again for your support. Yeah, I'm really grateful to you.